Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
So, welcome back to Faking Movies. This is episode 45, and I am purposefully talking while pouring my wine, so Zach can't edit that out.
Oh, excellent choice.
That has become an interesting challenge in recent episodes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're going to be, just a fair warning, we're going to be a little goofy tonight because Zach was on vacation and we haven't been able to record in a couple weeks, so we missed our boys.
Yeah.
No, it hurts. It hurts me so bad.
It hurt bad on the insides of my body.
And my heart and whatnot.
Where
but
emotions
anyway,
live.
Yeah. So I'm joined, of course, by Seth. How are you, Seth?
Full of emotions and black stuff.
Okay. You've got the humors out of balance, I assume?
Yeah, clearly.
We need to get your yellow bile up a little higher, I think, is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, I have too much black bile.
The humors.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
I'm flabby.
And how are you, Zach? Well, Zach's here as well.
Jolene.
Guys, we can't afford this.
Oh, sorry.
I don't think it counts if we sing it. Yeah. I don't think that's fair.
That our version of singing it is so off key and non-representational that they can't sue us. That we're probably covered under parody rights or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I watch a lot of drum cover videos and they pitch shift all the stuff if they want to get by copyright. So the bots definitely won't find our shit.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm. Well, so we're not usually a Jolene cover podcast. What we are is
not with that attitude.
What we are is a movie podcast, and you know, everybody has their cinematic blind spots, and we here at Faking Movies like to exploit those for funny jokes and maybe someday money. That hasn't happened yet, but
we'll get profits.
Still waiting on that McDonald's call, but we'll get there.
God. I would love to have my break today. I don't know. I don't know about you guys, but
I am also loving it. Yes.
Yeah. Well, this week,
don't pour coffee on my crotch.
Oh no! You fucked it up. Oh shit!
It's a deep cut there.
story from the mid '90s.
Yeah, in that it was not an advertising slogan. It was happened to a person.
Rommel.
They're still
rommel.
Sour about it.
Rommel.
They're very sour about it still to this day.
Yeah.
Rommel.
Anyway, Seth, you're faking a movie for us this week. Is that correct?
I am indeed faking a movie for lucky number 45, which is a thing now, I guess. So, I'm faking Bull Durham, starring Kevin Costner, Susan Sarandon, and Tim Robbins. You only gave me those three actors.
Yeah,
just for starters. Just for starters.
And so the one thing that I knew about this movie coming in is that this movie is about bases balls, in which there are both bases and balls.
Typically.
And so you fellas challenged me to do a sports movie, which inexplicably is a genre of film that I quite enjoy.
Right. We challenged you to do a sports movie because I know that Seth Fartnoy's AVD loves sports movies.
I do.
I did not know this. What would you say some of your favorites are?
Rookie of the Year, for example.
Good one. Great one.
Is bar none, my very favorite sports movie
of all time.
I was
going to say, I typically bleep that one because that is a fucking great movie, and I really hope we do it.
Yeah, I love that movie.
So it's almost weird, Zach, that you asked that question.
Yeah.
If you were expecting to bleep them out.
All right.
Yep.
My bad. What about A League of Their Own is very good. That's
A League of Their Own is good, but it isn't, mind-blowing. Field of Dreams is also a decent movie, but it is...
Yeah.
Starring Kevin Costner.
And then, of course, Basketball,
Well, that's good fun. Yeah. Only movie starring Real Big Fish as the house band of a team for a fictional sport.
God.
Uh-huh. And they have two songs on the soundtrack. One of them is an Aha cover, which is lovely.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, well, it's like how Squirrel Nut Zippers were in Monkey Bone a couple weeks ago, which is also inexplicable.
Yeah, the 90s were weird, it turns out.
Yeah, why do 90s movies like draft like these famous ska bands?
Yeah, like famous, quote-unquote, but ska bands.
Real Big Fish was never famous, ever. Yeah,
yeah, they were certainly no less than Jake.
Oh, even less famous and even older, yes.
Or Squirt Gun, if we want to get real obscure about it.
Yeah. All right, that concludes Skank Corner.
Cherry Pop and Daddy always makes me think of Bill Clinton for some reason. I don't know why.
Oh, boy. I don't know if we can use that one. We might have to cut that out.
We're going to have to go to the 90s for that. Okay. Judges? No.
Yeah, we'll have to talk to the lawyers about that one.
So, fellas, Bull Durham, I had a lot of trouble coming up with a pun title for this one.
Oh!
I forgot that's your thing.
Yeah, that's my thing.
Yeah, but I also forgot that.
I'm gonna give you some of my non-used ideas up front. Great. And then I'll give you the one that I eventually settled on. The first one is Bull Durham. Durham, which concerns a Norwegian archery team who has a competition in Durham, England. Mm-hmm. Ol, of course, or Oler, depending on whether you're Icelandic or Norwegian or whatnot.
I think we can trust the audience to know about that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He's one of maybe 7 or 8 gods that survived Ragnarok, and he is the god of archery and sometimes the hunt, depending on which Edda you're talking about.
Right.
But I was gonna have a Norwegian archery team, and they would always chant Ol's name before. So it'd be like, oh, on the power of Ol, Bull, and the competition is in Durham, England, which is near the Scottish border, for those people who don't know their British geography.
I think we should also assume that the audience knows that as well. Yeah, that's so common, that knowledge.
I think the cutting room floor is probably the right spot for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I thought about doing one involving curling because I could use Durham, England as well because it's so close to Scotland where they get curling stones from.
Yeah,
So then I have a bunch of notes here that are just sports, .. sports. Sports.
So you were doing a dream board? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And then for some reason I have Rahm Emanuel written here, and I think that I misspelled Durham and switch the A and the H, and it was going to be a Rahm Emanuel themed something.
So he was going to be the villain, and the town was going to be an anagram of his name or something.
It's going to be like, do Rahm. Like, it's going to be from Rahm. But turns out that one didn't work out.
Putting hyphens in titles is like standard procedure, but anagrams is like a whole new level.
The next idea I had involved bullfighting. Naturally, and in that one I had a picador moves up the ranks and eventually becomes a matador, but realizes that bullfighting is pretty much the worst thing possible.
Yeah.
And he starts rescuing bulls and saves Spain from its horrible, barbaric favorite sport. And it has nothing to do with Durham, so what I came up with is that he must be a kid from North Carolina that fell in love with The Sun Also Rises or some bullshit and wants to be a bullfighter.
I can see that being made. Like, I could see that as a movie. That might.
Yeah, that's
that
kind of an
work.
Under the Tuscan Sun situation. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like I could have.
It feels
some...
very Wes Anderson to me.
Yeah, like a kid reads The Sun Also Rises and doesn't
takes
hate
away
it.
All the wrong messages from the ones that only teenagers take away. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like everybody, the first time they read The Sun Also Rises.
Right.
And,
also, they really should cut that bullfighting shit out. It's no good. It's not.
not good.
It's nasty, and like, you know, yeah. like picadors, like their spears are all poison, and the bull is already like fucked up and a bunch of it's yeah. awful. Bullfighting is bullshit.
Yep.
So next in my notes, I have North Carolina is too on the nose, and then I have sports. ... sports. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote some stuff in Russian.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And then maybe this is a movie about Michael Jordan playing for the Bulls and being from North Carolina. Thought about that for a little while.
Sure enough.
Like the beginning of... What if this is a prequel to the beginning of Space Jam?
A prequel to that like 3-minute scene at the beginning of Space Jam. Yep. Uh-huh. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, that's
And then I have, what?
Oh, you didn't go with that? Yeah, okay.
No, I didn't go with that, because I don't know enough about Michael Jordan.
or the Space Jam canon?
Yeah, the Space Jam canon, yes. And then I, like, jumped off of sports for a second. It was, like, cooking competition where they use bowl, but the winner is secretly using ham, and everyone is too stupid to know the difference, is what I wrote. Because it's
I'm very
bowl,
sad you didn't
duh,
go with that.
Ham.
I'll vote right now. 10, 10, 10, 10. Oh, that sounds wonderful.
I'm waiting for the episode.
Dur, ham.
Yeah, oh, I love absolutely. It. Mm-hmm. I do love
well,
that.
Also, your last cooking movie got us screams. So
yeah, it's true.
Yeah, that's true.
I do love cooking movies.
Lots of merch born out of that one.
I
am waiting for the episode where Seth leads off with this and then just says, and then that was it. I didn't write one. These are just all
So just like pick, whatever. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
But we're going to get into my real movie now.
Okay.
Which I won't give you the next thing in my notes right now. That'll come later. But... So, my musings on sports movies is, like, the essence of a sports movie is someone that has no business playing a sport is now playing a sport.
Okay.
I mean, that's how most sports movies go, I feel.
Many are laid out that way.
A lot of the good ones. Yeah. If it's a hero story, then, yeah.
So...
It's a genre built around the... There's nothing in the rule book that says. Like,
yes, yeah. Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. A chimpanzee Classic. Can't be most valuable primate.
A dog can't play basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
A donkey can't kick field goals.
A group of dogs can't play soccer, I believe.
Well, they're pups, so I think there's a loophole because they're pups, yeah.
Let off into our favorite franchise, Space Buddies.
I think I've told you guys about this in real life before, but you know the same guy directed every single one of those movies.
Yeah.
I think we've done it on the podcast before, yeah.
Well, I think it bears repeating. This guy is both Canadian and only directs animals playing sports movies and used to direct erotic thrillers. So
that man
I'm pretty
is living
sure he's a serial
dream.
Killer.
Yeah,
oh, yeah I was going to say, that man needs to be in an institution in handcuffs.
Mm-hmm. the public needs to be saved from him.
Yeah.
All right, boyos, let me get into my Bull Durham now.
Yeah.
So despite me saying North Carolina is too on the nose, this movie takes place in Durham, North Carolina.
This is a good decision based on the real movie,
yeah.
I'll tell you.
Yeah,
well,
so
far, so good.
I honestly don't know enough about Durham, England to set a movie there. Though, honestly, I don't know enough about Durham, North Carolina.
Say, background info should not be the thing that stops you.
Yeah, well, sometimes
it never has.
Weird bullshit that I do, but this movie, it definitely doesn't, because I I fly fast and loose by the seat of my pants on some of this shit. Okay.
Perfect.
So, this movie takes place in Durham, North Carolina, and Tim Robbins and Kevin Costner are like giving their best horrible North Carolinian accents. Like, it's so hammed up and awful, but you know, it is what it is. Tim and Kev are best friends. They went to college together, they grew up together, they went to college together, they roomed together, and they continue to live together now. And they're all going about their business doing whatever bullshit. When inexplicably, they learn that the new hit sport overtaking the U.S. by storm is a game called Boy, which is the French word for bocce ball. In fact, it's not quite really bocce ball. Boule is played. It's spelled B-O-U-L-E-S, by the way.
That's very French, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, whoops, too many letters.
Yeah.
Whoops, all consonants. Yeah.
Whoops, like five vowels and a consonant that make the sound of the only missing vowel.
missing, yeah.
Yeah. But boule is like it's like bocce ball, but it has a metal ball and it takes place on a really rough surface.
Terrible bocce ball is what you're describing.
Yeah. Anyway, so Tim and Kev are like, yeah, we could do that. We play bocce ball all the time. You know, let's do that.
It is great, to be fair. It's a very enjoyable
game. Oh yeah, it is.
It's really tailor made for drinking.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah.
So of course, because this is a sports balls movie, we have a lot of scenes of them training and kind of making a shitty homemade boule court.
Sure.
And, you know, all sorts of typical sports balls movies things. Training montages, soliciting more players, what have you. And like one of the times they need to find more players, they enlist Susan Sarandon, who is excellent at this stupid sport.
Hold on, Seth.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Are you trying to tell me that a girl is gonna play sports with the guys?
Yeah, I mean it's a mixed sport anyway. So
I was gonna go the other way with this and say this is like all collegiate intramural teams where you play co-ed and you're like, fuck, we just need more girls to play softball. Come on.
Oh my god. Oh yeah, I can remember the days of when I still used my Facebook and half the people on there are like, hey, we need a girl for this soccer game this evening.
We need just like one girl to show up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The endless struggle. Yeah.
I was really envisioning that this horrible, stupid fake sport was just like anybody could play it. It didn't really matter.
Mm-hmm. I mean, bocce ball is kind of that. Yeah, that
I mean, it is realistically, but I just kind of figured you were going to go with the sports movie trope of like, you play boule like a girl.
This is a Mighty Ducks thing.
I thought about
the Cat Gaffney. Yeah.
I totally thought about doing that, but I eventually avoided it because, I didn't really want to bother with that this time.
Okay. Wait, you say you didn't going write sexism book. Into your Bull Durham? Because, boy, I've got some news for you.
I think that I'll be doing what is my first Audible on this one, because I needed another actor, sports reference.
That's a sports term,
did you hear that?
Nice.
Yeah. y'all should be very proud of me.
I am.
So I'm going to do an Audible with a new actor, and that is going to be Kevin Bacon.
Oh, hell yeah.
And I chose Kevin Bacon because he's about the same age as literally everybody else in this movie.
Yeah.
Also,
we're coming off that Dirty Dancing flash dance, John.
Ooh. Yeah.
Neither of those movies have Kevin Bacon, but all right.
Yeah.
Or not a flash dance. Footloose.
There you are.
Yep, there you go.
And I also like the idea of Kevin Bacon as kind of a loose cannon sort of situation.
Yes, I've watched Hollow Man with you. We know.
Yeah.
We've seen him at his loosest. Yes.
Solid or not solid?
Are you fellas asking me how much Kevin Bacon dong we see in this film?
Yeah, that's exactly what
okay, I think you need to, I mean, at the risk of, like, destroying a future episode, last time we were all together, we watched Hollow Man on, I think it was Wii, the cable channel, Women's Entertainment.
Yeah.
There are multiple scenes in that movie where you see his full penis, and this was on basic cable. Yeah. They didn't edit it out at all.
Yeah.
I think the more important thing is we all started watching the movie, and we all looked at each other, and we all were like, you know there's dick in this movie. And then we all went like, yeah, obviously, everyone knows that.
I just think it's important that the world know that Women's Entertainment Network doesn't censor full frontal male nudity, and I think it's about goddamn time. Yeah.
Yeah.
They like a good ghost dong on the We Know.
I'm sorry, Seth. Go on. We've got Loose Cannon, Kevin Bacon, who may or may not be hollow.
Yeah, who may or may not be a hollow man.
I mean, I hope we find out.
Yeah. We sure will. They get into some matches and stuff, and of course everything goes really shittily at the beginning because, you know, they're playing against, you know, people that have actually trained for this inexplicable sport. But, you know, they start to improve like every sports movie. And both of our main boys are trying to court Susan Sarandon, and it's causing all kinds of strife in their team, and they lose some matches or get in a fight or whatever, but they both want Sarandon, or so they think.
Both have
actually been using Susan as a confidant this entire time. So Susan knows that Kev and Tim are in love with each other, but neither of them is willing to admit that they're gay and that the two of them love this man with whom, you know, they spent their entire lives and their entire adult lives and in a very loving and nurturing manner. But they're just like unwilling to reconcile the fact that they're in love.
So that's my time period for this movie.
I mean,
good question.
Oh well, like in an ideal world, it would be mid-80s, but like this sort of thing would never actually fly then.
Well, I was just curious. I
think we do this a lot where we ascribe current day values and culture to old shit. That seems fine.
Yeah. And
you said it was Kevin and Tim that are in love with each other but won't tell each other. Won't admit it to each other or themselves.
Yeah. And so Susan is the only one, and so there'll be like a bunch of plot points where like she knows and is trying to get them to, you know, admit it to each other, but they're completely oblivious and also like still like closeted and things like that. Yeah.
So this is Kevin and Tim. Where? Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm thinking there's two Kevins.
I meant Kevin Costner. Kevin.
Yeah.
Costner.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking Bacon, and I was confused.
No.
I also thought Bacon. Why did we both go to that relationship?
Yeah. I don't know. No.
I think because Seth said him last. Maybe.
That's true. Yeah. Seth, no.
How are you gonna deal with all the fans that are shipping Kevin Bacon and Tim Robbins when your movie is based around Kevin Bacon? Yeah.
Kevin Costner
and Tim Robbins.
You know,
how's this fan outrage going to play out? Like,
wait, are there jerseys where you put their last names on the back of them? Maybe.
Sure.
Why and not? They all play themselves in this inexplicable.
I don't know. I haven't heard the whole script yet, but I'm pretty sure I'm Team Bacon. I don't know.
I mean, generally, yes. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, you just wait for it.
Okay.
Anyway, that was my tedious romantic subplot, which is actually kind of sweet and also
It sounds pretty.
Yeah.
And they eventually make up at the end of the second act, and then we get into hardcore sports moviedom.
Nice.
Excellent.
There is, of course, an inevitable betrayal by Kevin Bacon. Reveal
to other people that they're in love and it's like a big scandal.
No, I didn't really have that as a major plot point. I just meant that he like is shitty and betrays them somehow in the sport, like quits their team and gives all of their secrets to somebody else or whatever.
Classic sports movie. Yeah.
But we need to bring in somebody new, and I didn't really have any idea who, but it's some minor background character that now proves that they're like way, way better than anybody else at Bull. But
let's say Kevin Klein? Kevin.
Oh.
Kevin? What's another Kevin?
Think that's very
Kevin,
good.
Kevin Smith. Kevin.
Kevin Smith is not bad.
That would be out of left field for sure.
Well, in the mid-80s, Kevin Smith would have been like 18.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe that works.
I don't know. Yeah, very spry Kevin Smith throwing around the boo.
He never talks. He definitely doesn't talk.
No. So we have to bring in somebody new, and I don't really care who it is, but they'll probably be named Kevin.
it's required. Yeah.
there's a minor tournament because this still isn't like super popular stateside, but will eventually be popular. And our group of Costner and Robbins and Sarandon and apparently Kevin Smith end up as the American representative at an international competition. And of course, the French team is our villain, and we learn that Kevin Bacon's real name is Kevin Bacon.
Uh-oh.
And he was a spy for the Frenchman all along.
Oh, the dirty Frenchman.
Oh, no.
So, I have seen Beauty Shop, and I can tell you for a fact that Kevin Bacon's vaguely European accent work is just shitty enough to work for this movie.
Oh, excellent. Well, as Kevin Bacon, he...
Oh, dear.
He's of course on the French team, and you know, we get into the finals and the Americans lose, but then it turns out that the French team was cheating. Much
they're
like
using weighted boots.
As they do. They pay off the Russian judges or whatever.
I was actually thinking more like a recent scandal that hit the news where the Australian cricket team
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, I was using, like, abrasive tape and kind of roughing up the cricket ball in a way so that the ball would bounce in, like, an unpredictable, erratic manner.
Strange spin. Yeah, it's
yeah,
very
exactly.
similar to, like, a baseball pitcher, like, using spit or a
like
sandpaper.
A
yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah so yeah. that's so I was thinking that it was sort of like a mechanical cheating sort of thing. And so our team lost, but the French team is disqualified, and so our new team, or should I say our new family, embraces at the end. And that's my movie.
That's sweet.
Oh, that's really, really not bad. Yeah.
It's got the it's got the right kind of cliches. It's pretty sweet. Yeah, I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. That is an on point. mid-80s to mid-90s sports movie.
Oh yeah, I know that. I know that genre well, and
yeah,
I enjoy
like
it a lot,
of
even
my
though
hand.
It's real stupid.
Yep.
So before we get started on actual Bull Durham, I do want to just point out, we were talking a little bit about ska punk bands being inexplicably featured in movies. There's a scene in actual Bull Durham where Tim Robbins wears a shirt for the band Fishbone. Which
oh,
is a ska punk band.
I haven't
like,
heard
maybe
any Fishbone
the most,
in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Besides Sublime, they might be the most, they're the second most famous ska punk band.
Well,
yeah, and
probably.
Further, further bit of trivia, a different Tim Robbins movie, Tapeheads, features that band actually in the movie. So,
Wow.
And I won't tell you anything more about Tapeheads because we could probably do it on the show.
Tim Robbins has a good catalog for our thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
All over the fucking
place.
Let's
say Jacob's Ladder, even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Yeah. So what is
Seth,
the actual movie?
I have it up, Zach, if you want me to.
Go for it.
All right. Bull Durham, 1988.
Okay. That was about the time period I was thinking.
Yep.
Yeah. A fan who has an affair with one minor league baseball player each season meets an up-and-coming pitcher and the experienced catcher assigned to him.
Wait, is that how baseballs works?
Well, minor league.
It can.
Also,
yeah.
Also, I don't know that accurately describes this movie, honestly.
I mean, it describes one aspect of it, like
kind of there. This implies some sort of parallelism. I feel like the movie is a bit more sequential. I don't know.
So,
yeah, tell me more.
Shall we give a quick synopsis? I think I have a pretty quick one, Zach.
Yeah,
tell me more.
By all means, that is your part of the deal.
Okay. So in Bull Durham, basically, I think the main character is Susan Sarandon's character, Annie.
Okay.
She lives in Durham,
correct,
North Carolina. It should be her anyway. She lives in Durham, North Carolina, where the Durham Bulls play. They're a minor league baseball team, and every year she takes a young player under her wing to mentor them. Basically,
and by wing you mean vagina. Yes.
Yeah, she like
under her vagina.
She's a baseball whisperer, but it involves a lot of sex, apparently.
Yeah,
okay,
has a reputation for, like, any play. If you get picked by Annie at the start of the season, you're going to make it to the majors eventually.
Oh,
like,
shit.
Yeah, she's...
What do they call it? The big show? The Big Show.
The show. Yeah.
The show.
The Big Show is Paul White, the WWE and WCW wrestler.
Shit. But, oh, that's good. That's a mini episode. That's a
wrestling
mini episode.
I didn't think that we would get out of an episode without referencing fucking WWE.
So, Annie goes, you know, at the start of the season, she meets Tim Robbins' character.
Does she have a gun? Does she get her gun?
She does not, no.
Okay.
I think she might not like guns based on her characterization.
Okay.
But,
that seems right, yeah.
So, start of the season, she meets Tim Robbins, who plays Ebby Calvin Nuke Lelouch.
Well, those are very few of those names.
Those are just phonetic sounds.
Yeah, his name is Ebby Calvin Lelouch, and Nuke is the nickname that she gives him. Because she's like, you need a nickname. He is the hot new pitcher that the team brought in, and they're trying to, like,
which actor train is this?
Tim Robbins.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And they're trying to train him to kind of be ready to play in the major leagues. Part of that is they bring in Kevin Costner, who's a very experienced catcher who briefly played in the majors or the show. And he's kind of a career minor leaguer, and they want him to mentor this kid to get him ready. Yeah, because he's a lot of raw talent, but not a lot of, like, sense about him.
He's a loose cannon.
Exactly.
Yeah. So as the movie goes on, like, we learn that both of them obviously want Annie. Kevin Costner is a little more, like, standoffish. He feels like, I shouldn't have to compete with this kid. Sure. In the meantime, she gets into a relationship with Tim Robbins, and she's teaching him about poetry and weird, like, metaphysics around baseball and all kinds of shit. Like,
so teaching him, sort of, but Tim Robbins has a similar but sort of dissimilar attitude where he's like, I feel like I can also fuck anyone and I don't know what's going on. And so she just, like, falls
dumb.
For her.
Yeah.
Yeah. He falls for her, like, head over heels, and it's just like, what is all this?
He's very into her exoticism. But at the same time, Kevin Costner, who played his Crash Davis, is his character's name.
Such a good sports
he
man.
Is
oh. yeah it is
yeah he like is mentoring oh yeah it's real great he is mentoring Tim Robbins in, like, practical baseball sense, and, like, teaching about, like, you gotta respect the streak, you gotta learn how to give interviews, you gotta learn how to carry yourself around a team, all this stuff. Throughout the season, things are going on, the team turns around when Nuke starts to play well.
A lot of the hallmarks that you had as well, where they suck really bad in the beginning, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, everything's coming together.
Eventually, toward the end of the season, we find out that Tim Robbins gets called up to the majors, and this creates a little bit of tension where it's actually kind of a nice scene where Susan Sarandon and him have their kind of last moment together, and he's like, hey, I'll be back, and she's like, no, you won't. Like, it's okay. That's not what this is. Like,
I think she literally says, anybody who leaves Durham never comes back to Durham.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. At which point he goes to find Crash, his other mentor, and he's like, come on, let's go celebrate. And he's like, nah, you're too stupid. You don't deserve this. Like, they have a big falling out.
Also a really sweet scene.
The next morning is very sweet. Before Tim Robbins leaves for good, Crash comes back, and he's like, hey, you do deserve this. You learned a lot. Like, and we finally get to see Tim Robbins kind of get the upper hand on him by playing a joke on him kind of thing. It's a really nice, mentor-mentee scene.
Right.
Yeah, Crash gives him a bunch of shit, and then I think he turns it around by saying, like, hey, this is the kind of shit you're going to have to deal with in the majors. Like, why did you... Like, you have to react better to it, essentially.
And then after Tim Robbins is out of the picture, Kevin Costner and Susan Sarandon finally kind of get together. But he's not ready to settle down, so he kind of leaves to go play ball some more. Because he was cut by the team because they didn't need him anymore.
Right, and he's old.
He's getting older. And then it all wraps up where...
I mean, he's only, I think, 3 years older than
That is
Robbins
true. That's
reality,
the exact amount.
So I looked up their ages because I was trying to find an actor of similar age.
When the movie was filmed, Tim Robbins was 30, Kevin Costner was 33, and Susan Sarandon was 42.
Wow! Wouldn't have guessed. Okay.
No. Yeah. So then he does eventually come back to her, and you can tell, like, okay, these two are going to start a relationship. Who knows if it's going to last, but it's built on something more than just attraction. So
Yeah. That's a good ending.
That's a really broad strokes Bull Durham.
I have one amendment to Lee's entire summary, and that's every 6 minutes, someone is fucking.
Oh,
every
good.
6 minutes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of sex. A
lot of sex in this movie. Lee, do you want to speak to that at any capacity? So,
yeah, we talked about, me and Zach were talking about this last week. We did Dirty Dancing, which another movie with a lot of sex and sexual tension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Dirty Dancing felt very much like a movie that's sexy in like the exciting way that sex is exciting as a teen.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yes.
This is more of like a smolder kind of slow burn. This is sexy in the way that like an adult would get excited for, like, this is something interesting. I'm enticed both with my brain and with my hard bits.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a sexiness. It's a sexiness for a different part of your life, I think.
Okay.
But, and it is like everybody in this movie has fantastic chemistry. Like, I mean, Susan Sarandon and Tim Robbins met on this movie. They were together for years. Like,
They were together from like 88 until 2008 or something like that.
They might have been even more recently than that. But they'll be together for a very long time. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. So to lead off, I will say, so there's a lot of other people in this movie that we did give you.
Yeah, why not? Because I could have used some actors.
Yeah.
Not a lot of notable people.
Yeah, they weren't good enough, I think. But those three people, the performances are top notch. They're so good. Everybody fucking knocked it out of the park. Like, really good.
Sure.
Sarandon plays this, like, weird sort of in charge woman, but also very weirdly sexual, but she nails it. And Tim Robbins' character is like goofy as fuck, but he also nails it. And Costner plays, I think, himself. Lee and I decided, like, he's like a grizzled old asshole. Yeah.
But it works. Gills, it works really behind his ears, and
and he drinks his own pee.
And he has a sidekick played by Morgan Freeman called Aziz,
and Aziz has a telescope, and Kevin Costner cannot figure that out for
a while. He's like, oh, how could I stab that Sheriff of Nottingham coming in my way?
Let's make it all for one.
Well, that's a completely different movie.
That's a different movie. Yeah, that's from a different movie. But it's still a Bryan Adams theme song from the
Canada wins.
Me and Zach talked about, Zach mentioned the Susan Sarandon character, and I think that really bears a little more diving in.
It's so good. Yeah. I have a quote, actually. Can I lead off with this quote?
Yeah, no, go for it. Yeah.
This was like 10 minutes into the movie, and this is her like commanding her sort of third wave feminism, if you will. I think
let's
Crash,
get some citations in this episode. Yeah,
Crash asks her like, what's up with the Tim Robbins, because again he has to like coach him. He's like, how's his pitching? She goes well, he fucks like he pitches, sort of all over the place. just very good. She straddles the line very weirdly between like, she's kind of a groupie, but also kind of like a muse, if you will. Like, yeah.
Yeah, she's definitely supposed to be a muse. But I think that the groupie comment actually is a good segue, because her name is Annie because baseball groupies are called Annies.
Really?
Apparently. Huh. Yeah. But me and Zach were talking about this because Ron Shelton wrote and directed this movie, and he also is famously wrote and directed a few other sports and sports adjacent movies, like White Men Can't Jump and Tin Cup. Specifically were the ones we're thinking of.
Okay.
Yeah, like big ones.
Yeah. And the character of Annie is not dissimilar in her purpose for like the plot of the story from many of the other women that he writes.
Yeah.
Um, she is clearly there as like a prize for the character that we're supposed to root for. Yeah. Like the Crash Davis, the brooding hero kind of character.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
And like, I'll say I love this movie. My partner and I watch this movie together on Valentine's Day every year because it's very sexy. It's a great movie. Yeah. We own it on Amazon. Like, yeah. But she is written, and I don't know that I've noticed this before. She's clearly written to be very stupid. Like, we're supposed to think that her, like, spouting of literature and mysticism is, like, the kind of thing that a person who doesn't understand those things might say.
Interesting.
But Susan Sarandon's performance is so commanding that it doesn't come across that way.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and you noted that in the other movies, this is kind of the same thing, right?
Well, Rosie Perez pulls it off as well, I think, in White Men Can't Jump. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because she steals the whole scene every time. Like
Renee Russo in Tin Cup also fills this role. And she looks like a fool the whole time. Like, her character does not get it. Yeah. But anyway, I think, like, you have a very talented actress can turn this characterization into something interesting and endearing, as opposed to what I assume the screenwriter actually is trying to get across. Like... Mm-hmm.
Presumably, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we do the nightmare speech?
Yeah. So, what? Zach, there is a speech that happens pretty early on in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'd say minute 20, probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is when Annie is, she specifically tells Crash and Nuke to come back to her place.
Okay.
Because she's going to choose which one of them she mentors for the season.
Well, and they make a bunch of goofs about, like, I don't know if I'm into the devil's threesome, all that.
Right. And you can, like, the way the scene is set up, like, Crash goes because he's into Annie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he thinks he's better than Nuke. Nuke goes because he's a dumb kid. Yeah. And he's oh, this girl is apparently the best, and I'm supposed to, like, you know, I want to be part of this.
This is more of a, like, an obligation if I want to get to the majors. To the big show, excuse me.
Yeah. The show, yeah.
The show.
Yeah. Not the big show, famed WWE.
Well, it's
wrestler.
The big show! But anyway, so during this scene where she is choosing, and this is, I think, one of the parts that makes me think, like, this Ron Shelton doesn't actually like his female characters.
Yeah.
She is ostensibly has the power because she's deciding who to pick, and then Crash stands up and gives his hero speech where it turns around. It's like, oh no, it's Crash's decision, not hers, who she fucks. Like, so. But Zach, go ahead and give this speech. Yeah.
Oh, I don't like that.
Before I get into it, I will say this struck me as a half-hearted, more misogynistic Aaron Sorkin before his time kind of speech.
Oh, like, shit.
It feels like Aaron Sorkin maybe cribbed a little from this. I will point this out. I have heard from more than one female fan of this movie that they find this speech to be sexy. So,
yeah, which is very confusing to me, but yes.
Hmm.
Okay, here we go. It's going to be a long one, and it gets rough real quick.
So okay.
Hang on.
Hold on to your butts.
Well, I believe in the soul, the cock, the pussy, the small of a woman's back, the hanging curveball, high fiber, good scotch, that the novels of Susan Sontag are self-indulgent, overrated crap. I believe Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. I believe there ought to be a constitutional amendment outlawing AstroTurf and the designated hitter. Mm-hmm. I believe in the sweet spot, softcore pornography, opening your Christmas present. Oh boy, I'm a little drunk. Opening your presents Christmas morning rather than Christmas Eve. And I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last 3 days. Good night.
I've heard.
And then I think he closes the door.
I've heard that. I've heard parts of that speech before in various other, like, pop culture. Yeah. Arenas.
It's not. I was confused to hear Lee say that any female liked this thing at all. But I turned around, like, I started paying attention when I heard the cock and then the pussy, and I was like, oh, this can't go well.
But I think, so there's a part later in the movie where Nuke, like, is embarrassed to say the word pussy to Annie.
There is.
And that's, it's a little bit of like a, like, okay, he's the boy, Crash is the man, you know? Yeah. Like, yeah.
I mean, that is the, it's a father-son dynamic for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I wish my son, who is 3 years younger than me, also would.
well.
Would compete with you for the same woman.
Yeah. We had a catch and then other parental things. I don't know.
I think it also, it shouldn't be ignored that there's a, like, a lot of legitimately fun kind of baseball stuff that happens in this movie. Like, because it is a baseball movie.
Yes. Yeah, right. Okay. So many of my other comments are about that. Do you have stuff?
No, you could go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. So the inner monologues from all the players are fucking so good in this movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of VO superimposed over scenes of people playing baseball with, like, what's going on in their head while they're playing.
Yeah. So it's both Crash playing catcher and Crash batting, and Tim Robbins pitching and Tim Robbins batting. And they're so good. Like, it's either extreme overconfidence, like, I'm going to fuck this guy up. Or it's like, they have no idea what they're doing. And they're just like, I don't even know. But, like, it's what, like, when I played sports back in the day, like, it's exactly what I remember doing in my head. Like, it's so good.
Yeah, it feels very true to life. Like, where even these people who are supposed to be professionals or semi-professional, however you want to classify it, like, they go through the same kind of struggle as dumb kids trying to play a fucking sport. Yeah,
it's so good. And then, so, Lee alluded to this in his, summary, but there's a lot of Costner trying to mentor Tim Robbins, and part of that is getting him to get over himself. And so, Costner as the catcher and Tim Robbins as the pitcher.
Like, humiliating him some, or?
Oh, yeah, very absolutely. Much
is. Yeah.
Yeah. So, one of the themes of the pitching strategy is, like, trust your catcher when he makes calls on pitches.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And so when he doesn't, when Tim Robbins shakes off a call, Crash tells the batter what pitch he's gonna make.
Yeah, he
and then he hits
off
a home run, like, every time.
and that's what I think, one of the things about the movie is the final time that happens, and Crash and Nuke are talking after that, Nuke, for the first time, he's just kind of like, you told him what I was going to throw, right? Yeah, he accepts it now. And then later that same night, he finds out he's going to the majors. So, like, the moment that he finally is willing to trust everything. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's when he's given up enough to
Right. He submits to it finally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is very good. Yeah. I think that's all my baseball stuff. I don't know. Lee, do you have anything?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of fun, like, stuff about, like, superstition in sports.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, you apparently have to fuck Susan Sarandon in order to advance your career.
To get out of the minors,
Yeah.
there's some great scenes with the coaching staff for the team and the managers. Like, really, and, like, if you've ever seen an AFI best X type movies.
Yeah.
That Bull Durham is part of, these are the scenes that they always play. They play the scenes of the manager throwing a bunch of baseball bats into the showers and screaming at the players. They show
everybody, get in here in 10 seconds or you're fucking fired.
Yeah. You're lollygagging around first. Lollygagging. What does that make them? Lollygaggers. Then there's a really great scene where Crash goes out to the mound to talk to Nuke, and then every player of the team comes out to the mound, and the topic keeps shifting to different stuff, and finally it comes down to one of the coaches coming out too, and they're like, hey, we don't know what to get our teammate for his wedding. Oh, we should get him candlesticks. They're a nice present. All right, guys, let's get play baseball. Like, oh, and famous comedian Robert Wool plays that character. So he was the one famous person we didn't give you. Yeah.
Okay, fair. I don't know how I would have fit him into my
maybe as an announcer or something.
Been a squeeze. Yeah.
Yeah, for international major league boy.
I think like the other stuff as far as baseball is concerned, it's a little more like character based, like Crash, one of his things is that he's about to set the minor league home run record, and only him and Annie know that.
Oh.
And he doesn't want her to tell anyone because he's kind of ashamed. Because setting the minor league home run record means you've been in the minors long enough to set the minor league home.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Just like Michael Showalter's character in fucking Signs. Oh, yeah, when he makes fun of Joaquin Phoenix for the same thing.
Oh, shit.
Do you think that was a direct reference?
No.
Okay.
On an M. Night Shyamalan movie? Probably not.
Yeah.
No, that would have been cool.
I just think this is this is a very good movie. Like, there's a lot of, like, am I washed up?
Mm-hmm.
Can I do this?
Yeah. Through all of Seth's stuff, like, we were joking about the hallmarks of sports movies, but they hit them all in, like, a very tasteful way. Like,
yeah, okay.
It was very
I appreciate
enjoyable.
That.
Well, and I think that shines through. It got nominated for Best Original Screenplay the year it came out.
It
didn't win.
Well, the sports movies, like, occasionally they'll get, like, screenplay or something like that, I guess. Like Miracle or something like
that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Moneyball.
Moneyball.
Yeah.
Are those really sports movies? I mean, one is clearly, like...
Well...
Yeah.
Yeah,
sports are like, somewhat incidental, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, the purpose of it is not about the sport or the sportsman. It is about these underlying social issues. And it sounds like this movie is more.
I was just going to say, you can argue this.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Argue the exact same thing about this movie. The movies that it was up against that year were. Running on Empty, that's a movie I've never seen.
The Jackson Brown story?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Unfortunately, no.
Shit.
Big.
Oh.
Big? Oh, well. Fuck.
Yeah.
Okay.
A Fish Called Wanda, which is a future Zach movie.
I am doing that in 2 weeks. Yeah.
I am excited for that one.
And the movie that won was Rain Man, which is not a good movie in retrospect. But,
okay. I haven't seen Rain Man, but I know far too much to do it for
podcast. Everybody does, yeah.
Yeah.
I had some behind-the-scenes stuff that I wanted to talk about.
Yes, sir.
Sure, yeah. Let's do it.
Ron Shelton was a minor league baseball player in real life. Another Hollywood-type person, an actor, in fact, who was a minor league baseball player is Kurt Russell. And Kurt Russell helped him write the screenplay. And was also the original choice for the Kevin Costner character.
Of course, they're like interchangeable. They're like literally interchangeable.
Yeah,
they look the same.
He did not get it, and he was upset. But then when the movie came out, he apparently actually wrote and mailed fan letters to both of them saying that how good it was.
Wow. Oh, shit.
Wait, but all right. Look
at that humble-ass Kurt Russell being a class act. What the fuck?
Was he, like, super-duper young then? Did he not have a lot of credits? Like, why would he have not gotten
Russell?
It was a really low-budget movie, so it was kind of like...
Oh.
Ron Shelton ended up getting full creative control, so I don't know if it was just he decided to pick someone else or what, but...
Hmm.
Weird. Okay.
Other stuff that went on in the filming of this movie. Susan Sarandon and Tim Robbins met on this movie. Ron Shelton started telling a story in interviews back around 2008. I can't find like a source for this story prior to that. But he started saying that a year or two after this movie came out, he was having lunch at some Hollywood place that, you know, the Hollywood movers and shakers have lunch at, kind
of
deal.
Spago's in Beverly.
Yeah, there you go.
Sparrow's, you say?
Spago. Yeah.
Sparrow?
Yeah, Sparrow. Boiled pizza.
In the
LAX airport, yes. Sparrow? I want a 3-day-old piece of cheese pizza that just the grease is so concealed.
I won't pay $1 over $3.
What a weird way to say that.
I don't know. Are you a famous director? What are we doing?
So he says he was at this a couple years after the movie came out. He was at lunch at some famous Hollywood place, and someone walked up to him, and he said, "Excuse me, are you Ron Shelton?" And he's like, "Yes, I am." He's like,
"No one ever said that ever."
Yeah. "Are you Ron Shelton? Come with me." And he gets up and he comes with him and he takes him over to a different table.
And he shoots him in the head.
Oh. and famous, like, golden age of Hollywood director Billy Wilder is sitting there.
What?
And he goes,
Are you the guy who wrote and did that Bull Durham movie? That's a fucking great script. You made a great movie.
Like, fuck you, Ron Shelton. That maybe happened, but like, come on.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I'm sure it was at the Brown Derby or some bullshit. Like,
I've also
doesn't
I've
that
seen...
just seem like the dumbest fake bullshit?
Yeah, like... I've seen this guy's resume. Like, if that happened, then his resume would look very different, I think.
The other thing I wanted to point out, this isn't so much a behind the scenes thing as a me being a just patting my ego thing.
Great.
Back into the tales of my Twitter account, my personal Twitter account.
Oh yeah, when people thought that you were Sean for a while.
Well, I mean that is still my avatar, but yeah. So a couple of years ago while watching this movie, I tweeted this specifically. Speaking of Bull Durham, Ron Shelton shoots in the close-up way too much. Comedy lives in the wide shot. Which, of course, is a joke from 30 Rock.
Yes, it
but,
is.
But, yeah. That specific tweet has a single like. And that like...
One, only one.
A man named Ben Shelton. Ben Shelton is a filmmaker. He's mostly a TV director, but he happens to be the nephew of Ron Shelton, the man who made Bull Durham.
That's too much. That's too well. Okay, so I asked you this today on chats, and I don't know if you answered. Has he made anything of note? Is he like a?
He seems to be one of the like common directors for The Daily Show, and he's done a bunch of short films.
Oh shit! Okay, yeah. Okay. All right, so Ben Shelton, future friend of the podcast, should come on, I guess.
Talk a about member of the Shelton family agrees with me about his uncle's directorial missteps.
Yeah. We'll have him on for Tin Cup, I guess.
Yeah, let's get our Twitter maven all over this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, god damn. That's amazing.
But yeah, I mean, that's... Well, so I guess like and just another like comment about the relationship between Costner and Sarandon in this movie. There are parts in this movie where I think the intent was to make it seem like, oh, Costner's in control of this situation. Like, look at him beat her at a game of wits or whatever you want. But it doesn't ever play out like that. It plays out like it's two people. My impression of this movie is it's two people who have always been the smartest person in a relationship.
Sure.
Yes.
And now they've met someone that they think is smarter than themselves.
Yep. Yep.
And they don't know how to act around each other until finally they just fuck and decide, shit, I think I like this person.
That's a really interesting dynamic.
It is. And that I think that's why it fails initially, because they both like square off on each other and then they're both like, nah, not for me. And then they come back together because they are indeed actually matched.
Yeah, that's really cool, actually. I like that a lot.
Costner has a really sweet line at the end where he's like, he mentions that he might have a chance to be a manager at some small bullshit team in California next year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he asks if she thinks he can make it to the show as a manager. And she goes off on like a tangent about like nonlinear thinking and baseball and this and that. And he stops her and he goes, hey, I know you've got all these theories and I do want to hear every single one of them. But for now, let's just be with each other. And it's kind of sweet. Like it is. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess
it feels like both of them letting their guard down, which is something that I don't think their characters do very often.
I mean, that's a really like sweet and interesting and
it's a
like palpable thing. Yeah.
Right. For 1988, the love story is surprisingly nuanced. Yeah.
Hmm.
And okay. I think it maybe wouldn't have been if another actress played the role.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess my only other pre-rating comment was, and I wrote this, I think, in minute 5 of the movie, and then I moved it down to the bottom of my notes.
Uh-oh.
Does this title pan out at all? It's the team name and then the city, and that makes no fucking sense
whatsoever. I actually can explain it.
The baseball team is the Durham Bulls. Why do we call it Bull Durham?
I can
tell you what it means.
Is it a bowl?
Stop.
Is it a bowl in a China shop?
I will not.
Is it? Is it about picadors? Is it about the name of that one Lee, Norse god? That
Seth, don't stop, you know don't what? Stop. If we keep talking, want, we can.
You know
he can
I don't
never
want
do
to explain it anymore. I don't. I'm gonna fuck you guys.
I tried.
It's
to come
not
up
a
with
theory.
Something.
I can tell you the exact meaning of it. Like,
right, it's fine. Never brought up. This is why I was.
Oh,
curious.
Look at me! I'm Lee. I'm the smartest guy in the room all the time. I know Major League Baseball. I definitely don't want
to
talk about
baseball. It has nothing to do with
Norse
baseball.
Norse god Ola, who survived Ragnarok or whatever.
You, you know, fuck you. You finish the show by yourselves. I don't want to do it anymore.
Oh no!
Oh no! Come back, Lee. We're just goofing.
Okay. No, the Durham Tobacco Company in the 1800s.
The Rahm Emanuel Tobacco Company?
Yeah,
their most famous product was the brand name of it was Bull, and it became a stock reference for the city of Durham. Durham was Bull Durham, because Bull came from Durham. Yeah.
Wow, as far as marketing goes, that's a very niche kind of goof on that. I guess, right? Did people get that?
I mean, it's still
outside of Durham.
At least up until the 80s when this movie was made, it was still something that people recognized. So
okay. I don't think you could grow tobacco in Durham, England. It doesn't seem likely.
So what do you think about this movie, Zach? What kind of
the last thing is not very good.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh,
as
boy,
far as
I'm
ratings
the worst
go,
tonight.
So
what's the IMDb?
So okay. IMDb is 7.1.
Holy shit. Okay.
Votes. Yeah, it's up there.
Surprisingly low.
You think so?
Honestly. Hmm. Well, I'll give a reason for that when I give my rating.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay. I'm with you. Yeah, so this is my last anecdote. Nope. This weekend my family was in town, and a thing we do often is drink and put puzzles together.
That's nice. That's pretty cool, yeah. Actually. I
we're,
hella love
we're
that sort
very,
of thing, so.
Very cool people. So they left, and we didn't quite have the puzzle put together. So a friend of the show, Erica, and I finished the puzzle while we were doing this. She was fully turned away from the television while this movie was on.
Mm-hmm.
And she stopped several times to turn around and watch this movie. And like actually enjoy it. And I have watched many movies from the podcast with her, and she gave zero fucks about any of them, like genuinely disliked them. But this one, not only a sports movie, but an old movie, she was like, it finished and she goes, oh, that was really good. And I was like, yeah, no, I weirdly, yes. So yeah, like I think this crosses genres and time zones. Like it's
yes,
it's really good. Yeah.
Hmm.
I'll give actual Bull Durham like a, I think higher than a 7.1. I'm gonna go like 8.
Oh.
8 on this one. Yeah.
Okay.
It's very good. Seth's I do like a good made up sport. That's very fun.
It's a real sport.
Okay, well.
With Ryan Gumbel.
You know.
Yes.
The interplay and the tedious romantic subplot was also very on brand. Yeah.
Yeah.
For us. Yeah, I'll not quite as good, but also very good. I'll go 7.5 on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll accept it.
Yeah.
So, the reason why I think 7.1 is weird, like weirdly low for this movie, is because of, Zach mentioned that it's a very like cross-genre kind of movie.
Yeah.
And that, if you look up, there's all these lists of like the best this type of movie, the best that type of movie.
Right.
Bull Durham, and I'll just like mention this, routinely shows up on lists of the best sports movie. Like ESPN called it the best sports movie of all time a couple years ago.
It's not better than the beep.
Wait. Yeah. All time? Really?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So best sports movie of all time. And it's usually up in the top five in lists about sports movies in general.
Sure.
Yeah.
it's also routinely in the top five of like best romantic movies of all time. And in addition to that, it is in the AFI list of the funniest movies of all time, like best comedies.
Huh.
So this, for a movie that is near the top in two totally seemingly disparate genres.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Plus also on a list for like a very broad genre like comedy. I kind of would have thought that the number rating for IMDb anyway would be much higher than that. Huh. That's why I was surprised by the 7.1.
That is fair. Well, also, so 7.1 is like def below the top 250, but it's very good for IMDb.
That's real high. It's
a great, and I think it is a great movie. And number wise, like, go ahead, Seth.
I mean, Buffalo 66 beat it, and so did...
What? No. Really?
Yeah, if y'all will recall, Buffalo 66 was a 7.5.
Oh, my God.
Because people are stupid.
Not for me, it wasn't.
But they shoot horses, don't they? It was a 7.9, so, you know.
Okay, so ratings mean nothing, then,
yes,
I guess.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I guess so. Right. Well, how did it take us that long to figure that out?
Well...
So yeah,
behind the scenes here, I have the spreadsheet where I have been cataloging all of our ratings.
Tuned for mini ep following our 1 year anniversary. For
yeah.
That.
Yeah, yeah, dear audience, sure. we're gonna put up a whole power ranking. It's gonna be very fun.
Yeah, all of our individual rankings. What movie we liked best? What we liked least? What apparently the stupid idiot populace thinks is good.
The Vox Populi, if you will, that is throwback to the network.
Yeah. I mean, so also Latin.
sure.
You could argue that a good deal of the English language is a throwback to Latin,
hey,
though.
So. Get off my back, man.
On the job market. Seth Hardwick.
Yeah,
Knows Latin is a component of English.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Right, what do you got, Lee?
Yeah.
I think, and I'll fully admit that, like, there is some like personal feelings wrapped up in my ranking of this movie. Like,
sure.
It is a movie that I have always enjoyed, and I now enjoy on like different levels than maybe I used to for different reasons. But I think like easily the real movie I would give like, let's say 8.2.
Okay.
Yeah. Very high. Very good.
Very sexy. I teased it last week's episode. We did two sticky ones in a row, and I was not disappointed in my rewatches of either. So, Seth, your movie, you knocked it out of the fucking park. You hit everything.
Yeah.
You hit it all.
I oddly love sports movies, even though it makes no sense.
You love sports movies, and I think you understand them just so wonderfully. And you understand the sensibilities of Zach and I very well as well.
I feel like if anything, we've hit our pandering stride very well.
Oh, yeah. This show is for the three of us, which doesn't bode well for the future of our... Yeah.
No, we clearly just make movies just for the three of us.
But...
I like it. I'm not going to do it, so whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Go for it. All that being said, like, I think my personal connection to the actual movie is too strong. It cannot overcome. I'm going to give you a 7.9.
Okay. It's fine.
Because, shit, I would love that movie, but, like, it's not Bull Durham. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to be fair, though, like, any mid-90s or like late 80s sports movie, I'll watch the fuck out of that.
Of
them.
The problem is that all those movies aren't Bull Durham. Durham has that extra layer to it that is just
true.
Wonderful.
That's true. Mm-hmm. All right. So next week, this is going to be a good one, folks.
I'm excited for this one.
We got Lee next week.
I'm real excited for this one.
Lee's doing, starring The Beef. He's doing Holes.
The Beef himself.
The Beef himself.
Holes.
It's going to be really good.
Little hint, Sigourney Weaver is also in this movie.
Ooh. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So get ready for that fun. Sigourney Weaver and Shia LaBeouf.
It's also about baseball, so get ready. It's not.
Yeah.
Oh.
We're so we finished our animal theme trifecta, we did. And now we're moving on to sports movies.
We have so many animal. Bull Durham's an animal movie too.
Oh, fuck.
Oh shit.
Wait, how many do we have in a row? We had at least five in a row that were just
Dirty
about...
Dancing broke it up a little bit.
Are you sure? Well, that had animalistic-like sex.
Yeah, there was a lot of animal boning in that one.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Oof, boof, boof. Right.
We're all garbage. I believe, I don't know about you guys, but I believe in the faking movies, the tedious romantic subplot. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And the crazy, crazy Seth breaking up of words to make a title.
Always, yes.
Yes.
It never fails.